If you head down to the last house on the left, which doesn't really figure into this movie in any way whatsoever, you will find, I don't know, because that house is never in Wes Craven's Last House on the Left. Like, what the fuck? It's Loathsome Things, folks. A horror movie podcast where my co-host Josh and myself, John, discuss, usually we try to discuss good horror movies. This being
good horror movies.
Yeah, this being the month of April where we do the threequel, we started hard and strong, that sounds weird, with Ingmar Bergman's The Virgin Spring, a fine film, but quite daunting, a rape revenge tale wrapped around Scandinavian or Norse mythology, lots of interesting subtext and themes and symbolism. And then we moved on to Wes Craven's Last House on the Left, 1972, his take on Bergman's The Virgin Spring, and boy, you wouldn't know it unless you were told, because this movie sucks my nards.
Oh, thank God. I was so not looking forward to having to be the one that was like, John, I don't think this is a good movie. And then you'd be like, oh, really? I see all of its redeeming qualities.
I don't know what those qualities are. And if they're there, I couldn't find them.
Oh, man. I'm vastly happy about that, except for the part where you said that this is April because it's March.
Son of a bee sting.
I also, like, in our last episode, you talked about how, like, it makes sense because the Virgin Spring, and we're doing this at the outset of spring, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's really neat. And then, like, somewhere in the last 2 weeks, someone mentioned how March is Women's History Month, and I was like, oh, fuck.
Jesus Christ. We are masters of timing.
Ooh, so good at keeping time and knowing when things are.
The good thing is that in 2 weeks, we'll be discussing something much more horrible.
Oh, good.
Jesus Christ.
Anything if to just not have to talk about this movie would be great.
Oh man, wow. Yeah, we'll yeah. take our chances in a couple weeks, but at least we won't be talking about this movie.
Not this one. Let's talk about Wes Craven first. Yeah. He directed A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one. He also directed the first four Scream movies because he's so good at this. And he, after this movie that we'll be talking about today for terrible reasons, he directed The Hills Have Eyes and The Hills Have Eyes 2. And wildly, this one was a surprise to me, he directed Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's true. He did do Swamp Thing, which I didn't hate.
Adrian Barbeau.
Yeah, he did Deadly Blessings, which I liked. It's a piece of shit, but I liked it. He did The People Under the Stairs, which is decent. He did Shocker, which he should have been, he should have been executed for making Shocker and not brought back. He's definitely, right up there as far as most people's horror people's opinions, in the big, what, four or five, big three or four, Carpenter, him, Romero, he really just shouldn't be there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, Toby Hooper should be up there.
Yes. Whenever I hear Wes Craven, I think, I see Robert Englund's face, and then every time I actually see a picture of Wes Craven, I'm immediately disappointed. But I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
He's so normal looking.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nightmare movies are, or at least, you know, the first movie's pretty good, and some of the other movies are entertaining, but I was never a huge fan of that franchise. It just never really did much for me, personally. Yeah. I just didn't care for those movies, and I still don't, really. Scream, I fucking hate.
Yeah.
I saw the first one, and I was done. And, yeah, I mean, other than that, I think, you know, Deadly Blessing I saw recently, which I liked, and like I said, People Under the Stairs I like, even though it's really not a very good movie, but it's decent. I wouldn't call it a great film or anything close to that. It's better than this fucking turd.
A problem that I have with Wes Craven, he has the cheesiest dad sense of humor in the whole goddamn world, and I don't find it amusing. Like, yeah. Like, the Scream franchise is full of jokes that he thinks are funny, and this movie that we're going to be reviewing is full of jokes that he thinks are funny, and I just don't find it humorous, so I'm sure that that's a big part of, like, the whole, like, Wes Craven segment of the horror community is people that have a really shitty sense of humor.
I mean, this movie has this really awful made-for-TV soap opera quality to it, and it's just bad. Like, it doesn't work in so many ways. I mean, it's a really terrible film. I was surprised at how bad it was. I'm really proud of myself for avoiding it for so long.
Yeah. I mean, there are, like, little moments of artistic quality yeah. in it, but it's just, like, floating in a pond of gross, like, mishmash of all of his worst ideas and also those other things that he'd seen on TV. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why? Oh, yeah. This movie just caters to the lowest common denominator. And there's no, like Roger Ebert liked this film. And he's such a weird dude because this movie is really just, it's offensive, but I can deal with that because that's just knee-jerk stuff. I mean, any idiot can make an offensive film. That part, yeah. Whatever, you know. But the reason why I don't like this film is because it's not good. And
yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter that it's schlock or whatever. I've seen a lot of schlock films that I enjoy a lot. You know, I don't consider them masterpieces because they're shit, but I enjoy them. But this movie's just, it's not even enjoyable. It's just, it's insultingly stupid.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing that you can say about this movie is it inspired much better shocking movies to be made. Like, that you could tell, like, that an entire generation of transgressive horror directors saw this movie and thought to themselves, oh, I could make something better than that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I respect its place in horror, I understand that it, you know, I understand how it fits. It just ultimately isn't for me. One anecdote that I thought was funny in the trivia stuff on IMDb was when they talked about how Craven walked out of Reservoir Dogs because it was too extreme for him. And Tarantino's reaction was, I'm sorry, the guy that made The Last House on the Left walked out of Reservoir Dogs? What, does he have a bad memory? Give me a fucking
yeah. What a piece of shit.
What a baby.
Speaking of pieces of shit, this movie was produced by Sean S. Cunningham, who I would go out on a limb and say, perhaps he's not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So that's a good segue, right?
Yeah.
He not only produced this film, but he did the costume design. So that means that he was responsible for picking out the blouses, what nipples could be seen through.
He was responsible for picking out Weasel's suit and sandals combo.
To be fair, the costume selection in here, like, it was on point.
They fit the characters, yeah.
He's probably most famous for directing the first Friday the 13th movie and continued to be the keeper of the Friday the 13th franchise. And he was also the producer on all four of the House movies.
Mm.
Yes. And speaking of House and the House movies, in one scene in this movie, a car full of hippies taunt two police officers and flip them off and yell insults at them. And one of those hippies is none other than Steve Miner, who would go on to direct House, Friday the 13th, Part 2 and 3, Halloween, H2O, and Lake Placid.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't
know. Yeah.
I mean, apparently this movie was so traumatizing that the actress that plays Mary, the main character, mm-hmm. was, you know, just like, it's like basically like scarred for life from making this film. She refused to talk about it in interviews. And the guy that played Junior apparently was also extremely uncomfortable with the film. He had a really hard time with it. And apparently, to stay in character, Weasel and Krug continued to harass the girls off camera.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
For that verite that this movie delivers.
The actress who played Mary, like, went on to be in, like, a handful of other exploitation films. But, like, within 2 years of this movie coming out, was just done with acting and Hollywood altogether.
She's the only one who made anything, you know, that I even felt worth writing down. And I only wrote it down because I liked the title, Legacy of Satan. other than that, the only one that did any acting that sounded hilarious was Lucy Grantham, who played Phyllis, who was in a porno called Linda Lovelace Meets Miss Jones.
Yeah. Well, Weasel is Fred J. Lincoln, who became a prolific porn director.
Oh, Jesus.
And his, like, he has literally hundreds, he's directed hundreds of pornographic films, including such hits as Furburgers, Home of the Box Lunch, and The Last Whorehouse on the Left.
Oh, my God. Furburgers. Yeah, I guess what it was is he just refused to do interviews. It didn't have anything to do with shame.
Yeah, yeah.
Because clearly he doesn't have it. No,
he has a whole series of pornographic films called The Enema Bandit.
Jesus Christ. What a dark road we've gone down for Women's Month.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
And then Martin Cove, the guy who played the deputy, went on to have an enormous career. He's like kind of super famous now. His name is Martin Cove. He has over 200 acting credits. He's still acting. He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He was in The Twilight Zone 85. He was in Death Race 2000, Rambo First Blood Part 2. He was in The Karate Kid, The Karate Kid Part 2, The Karate Kid Part 2, Part 3, and 42 episodes of Cobra Kai as Crease.
Oh my God, that's Crease.
That's Crease.
Oh dear God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it is him. Oh my God. Oh no. Oh no.
Yep. Crease was in Last House on the Left as a bumbling deputy.
Oh, no.
That fell off a chicken truck.
Oh my God. Oh.
Yep.
Wow. Woo! That I didn't get that far. That is amazing.
And if you've watched this movie and listened to the music, all of that music was performed by David Hess, the actor who plays Krug. Oh. And the songs from this movie have gone on to be in other films, including The Hateful Eight and the original Cabin Fever.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
congrats.
All right, we're done. We don't have to talk about this movie anymore.
Yeah, we're done. We'll see you next time, folks.
Woo! Good job, everyone. What else have we been watching in horror?
Dear God.
The movie starts off with a mailman talking about how hot the freshly 17-year-old Mary is while we see her tits in a bathroom. She exits the bathroom to engage in the shittiest 1970s banter to ever be had, that is had between Mary and her parents as they all discuss her tits.
Jesus Christ.
She's going to the bad part of town with her friend Phyllis to see a band called Bloodlust with her tits showing through her shirt.
Yeah.
Her dad gives her a necklace with a very generic peace symbol on it, and she's very thankful for it. Her mom doesn't get as much thank you as this would be a part of the callback to the Virgin Spring. Mary and Phyllis go into the woods and drink pond liquor while talking about Mary's tits.
Okay, sorry.
The radio warns them about on-the-run criminal Sadie, an animal-like woman, Krug, a priest and nun murderer, his bastard son Junior, who Krug got addicted to heroin to control him, and Weasel, an armed, child-molesting, peeping Tom. Cool.
Great.
At no point in this movie does he peep a Tom, so I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah, yeah.
The four of them, we are then moved to the apartment that they're squatting in. The four of them have what can only be described as insufferable women's lib and male chauvinism banter, upon which Sadie concludes that she wants two more women to join so they will have equal representation. Junior is then sent outside and lures Mary and Phyllis into the apartment with promises of marijuana. Once they get in, the door is locked, they are teased, threatened, beaten, and then raped. Interspersed with this, Mom and Pop are preparing a birthday surprise for Mary while overly happy music is playing behind them, until the music turns sexy and the scene of the girls getting raped off screen is then interspersed with Mom and Pop getting dirty on the sofa. To be fair, the violence and the rape and the sex all happens off screen. The next morning, the criminals stow the limp girls in the trunk of their convertible and drive away while the Collingsworths are worried about Mary not having come home last night. Pop insists they're fine.
Yeah, everything's gonna be fine. You girls, you know, girls, this is a rite of passage for young women. It's perfectly normal for them to not come home at all. He even says, let her have a fling. Great. Then we get a wonderful nature scene. The gang's now driving through the countryside listening to bouncy kazoo music, which is celebrating, the song is celebrating these rapist murderers. It's bizarre.
It's a song about them and what they're doing and what they're about to do, playing while they're driving, and it's just the wildest movie making decision I've ever seen.
Bizarre and out of place.
And then we're gonna rape them, and then we're gonna kill them.
We'll chop off her arm and stab her 50 times in the back. It's like, what the fuck?
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. So they're talking a bunch of bullshit. Movies like, bad movies like to put scenes in it where people talk bullshit. This one, yeah. Sadie talks about Sigmund Freud and the analogy of the Grand Canyon, how she has a Grand Canyon between her legs or whatever. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. That's, that's.
And she calls it a pahalis.
Pahalis. Jesus Christ. Back at the Collingwoods house, the cops are there. Chubby Mick Coppin Stance is sitting there trying to reassure them. It not working at all. Meanwhile, the gang's car breaks down right in front of the Collingswood house. Okay, that's fine. Back inside the house again, the cop is eating cake and being useless. Back to the gang, they wander off into the woods because it's now rapey woods playtime. I don't know. Whatever. They play an incredibly entertaining game called Phyllis Does Stuff or Mary Gets Cut, basically.
Yep.
They make Phyllis piss her pants, which they all find hilarious, and then they strip her of her piss-laden pants and the rest of her clothing. Then they order Phyllis to hit Mary. That's a barrel of laughs. Then they strip the girls down and taunt them while we hear a touching, folksy acoustic song sung by Krug. Okay. And then, meanwhile, we cut back to the police station for no good reason and have a little interaction between the two cops that has no bearing on anything. Krug takes off to go get some firewood. Weasel sticks around to watch the girls. Phyllis makes a wonderful plan with Mary to run for it, and then Mary will run for it in the chaos or something. It's not going to work. We all know that. Weasel and Sadie take off to give chase, so Junior sticks around to watch Mary. To celebrate this, the movie plays groovy rock music. Mary tries to make friends with Junior to, you know, so she can getaway, and she promises to get him a fix. It's the only way to really sway him to do anything. And by the way, I'd just like to point out that hearing Junior do his frog impression back at the squatter's house made me want to commit suicide. I'm just going to throw that out there. I was very sad to be alive and to be the same type of animal in the world of genetics as him.
To share like almost all of our DNA with that.
Evolution is supposed to favor the victor. And somehow this guy is the like end result of generations of survivors and just to create this guy.
The high point of evolution. Ribbit.
The culmination of genetics. Anyways, yeah. So she promises to get him a fix. So we hear this cop bulletin that has located the gang at a gas station. Apparently they had been seen at a gas station. And the cops, who are just this side of brain dead, realize that they've missed a golden opportunity back at the Collingswood house when they walked by the broken down car, or drove by it, I guess, in their car. Yeah. They are hearing this on the radio. So they rush back over there. We cut back to the fun and games in the woods where Phyllis is still on the run. We see it takes much too long, eats up some screen time. Eventually Sadie clocks Phyllis with a rock, which just makes her bleed a little bit and fall down. And then she runs off and stumbles into a cemetery right at the road. And instead of heading straight to the road, she just kind of lingers in the cemetery for a little while, gets caught by the crew, who somehow get ahead of her and somehow are standing there as she's running forward, looking backwards, and runs into them. Because that's normal. For her troubles, she gets stabbed in the back by Weasel. And then Krug shows, he's there, he asks how she got so close to the road, and Weasel says, this is another fine moment in the film, we caught her, don't worry about it. So that's great.
If you haven't watched this movie, which you shouldn't, The general vibe of these four criminals is, like, imagine Vinny Barbarino, but with a switchblade.
Hey, let's go rape this girl over here.
Yeah, basically that.
So bad.
Yeah. Yeah, so the police cruiser runs out of gas, because they're incompetent police officers. And so they have to now, like, walk down the longest street in the world, featuring no other automobiles.
No.
I guess that's why it's the last house on the left, is that a lot of the details of this movie are a real stretch. Like, just, like, maybe this will make it make sense, thought Wes Craven in 1972.
There's a bit where they walk across this area on the road that's been, like, a big Target has been spray painted, and there's some sort of like graffiti text that we don't see. It's like, what the fuck was that? It was so weird. I don't know.
So yeah, and if it's the last there, we'll fucking get to it. The trio catches up to Phyllis. They take in turns stabbing her. Then they catch up to Mary and Junior, because while they were off chasing Phyllis, Mary had renamed Junior Willow and put her bland ass necklace on him to endear herself to him. And so she's trying to run out of the woods to her house, which she knows is just across the street. And he's going with her, but in, like, the most, like, flimsy, like, slow-her-down way possible, because, you know. And so they catch up to them and then hold her down. Krug carves his name into her chest with the switchblade and then rapes her. And then there's this really long scene of her, like, getting up and stumbling around while the three criminals, I guess, feel bad about themselves. We see Weasel, like, picking grass off of the sticky blood on his hands. And Sadie doesn't seem happy. And Krug is, like, trying to wipe his hands off while she stumbles around, pukes, says the Lord's Prayer, and then wanders into the nearby pond or lake or whatever. Krug gets the gun from Weasel and does a really, like, big, long, like, aimy, like, arcing arm motion, shoots her dead in the water where her body starts to float, and then he keeps shooting, and it's based on this painting. I forget who it's by. It's a very nice painting. It's an actual piece of art that Wes Craven saw and was like, ooh, I'm art too. And so he put this in there based on the piece of art with her, like, floating in the mucky pond.
It's like Lady, what is it? Lady Guinevere or whatever, the lady in the lake kind of.
Yeah.
What an asshole. Yeah. What a fucking asshole. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Speaking of what an asshole, the cops come across a chicken truck. There is a woman with a truck loaded all the way up with chickens. And there, it's a lot of comical business with them having to get on the roof of the truck and it not, and then falling off because she's got so many chickens. And so they still have to walk, that's over. The four then visit the parent mom and pop's house. They've changed out of their bloody clothes and they're like, hey, could you drive us into town? But they're also, you know, like, cutting the cord to the TV so that, I don't know, they can't see the police. But they're like, oh, no, this is, we're an old school kind of family. We'll put you up for the night. So they have them stay in Mary's room. So they are all in Mary's room and they see pictures of Mary and her friends all the while. And they're like, hey, what do you think are the odds of who lives here? And that's great. And then while this is happening, Junior is suffering from withdrawals because Krug just won't give him a fix. And so he's in the bathroom puking. Mom goes into the bathroom to help him with his puking and she sees that he's wearing Mary's peace necklace. So she goes and snoops through their luggage and finds their bloody clothes as she hears Junior complaining to Krug that he needs a fix, and they talk about the fact that they killed Mary and that Mary's body is in the pond. Skip somewhere else to now Mom and Pop are running across the street and immediately find her body at the pond shore and cradle her dead but alive body to them.
But she keeps moving. I don't understand that.
So that was because when he filmed it, she was still, like, the idea was that she was still alive and she was going to say, oh yeah, those are the ones that killed me, and then die. But then he, like, cut that out of the movie afterwards. So yeah, so they cradle their dead but definitely still alive daughter that this doctor can't do anything to save because she's dead, still alive. And then Weasel has a dream about the two of them chiseling his teeth out, and he wakes up with a start.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite scene in the whole movie, where they put the chisel. The chisel? Put the chisel on his chisel. Teeth. And he gets his teeth chiseled. Which we don't.
Chisel teeth.
We see the chisel there, but we don't see any of the chiseling. Wow, God, it's just the things that pop up as I think about. I was thinking about, like, how bad Wes Craven is when it comes to urban anything, and that these people represent, like, the fear of the urban world, like this the nightmare breakdown of society, because ultimately Wes Craven is, like, the champion of the suburbs. He's like Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, like these are all suburban people. And that's where he feels comfortable, clearly. Like, there's no street smarts in this guy at all. And for him to have these characters that are like, yeah, just, like, go over here and, like, fucking rape this bitch. It's like, Okay, yeah. This is really bad, dude. This is like Schoolhouse Rock rape. It's just not working at all.
That's the whole point of it being the last house on the left, is it doesn't matter how far out you are or how a doctor you are or how nice your house is, the, I guess, New Jersey people will come rape your daughters and try to kill you.
Yeah, a little slab, a hunk, a hankering for a little rape. Oh my.
Yeah.
Or something. Okay. Yeah, so now we're kind of like dipping kind of hard into Virgin Spring territory where the family now knows what's going on. Dad is heads down to the basement to do some revenge prep while Weasel gets up, gets fully dressed post-nightmare, including his tie, and comes across Mom, who is pensively drinking whiskey in the bedroom or one of the rooms. He starts hitting on her, and she immediately pretends to be into it because apparently she's the greatest revenge actress of all time. They basically decide to go for a stroll, and she pretends like she's gonna that it would be really cool because she's always fantasized about having a guy take her while being tied up. So she suggests she tie his hands behind his back. So of course she does with his tie. Back at the house, Dad is now home aloning the house.
That is exactly what he's doing.
In preparation of his big fucking revenge plan, which is like, fray a wire and put it under a doormat and pour water on it and spray shaving cream all in front of a door. And I love that. It's like, what the fuck is this?
And I love that it's so much prep for so little payoff. Like, he does the shaving cream bit, and then the guy's like, oh no, shaving cream. Oh well, I'll just keep going.
The guy's like, oh, okay. And that's so fucking stupid. Oh my god, yeah. So he's totally home loaning the house. Mom ties Weasel up now. Yeah, she's got him tied up. We're cutting back and forth. Dad does the old shaving cream trick, like I was mentioning. Mom, in the meanwhile, enacting her plan, quote-unquote, accidentally zips Weasel's wiener up in his zipper and then starts jerking him off. Dad goes into the bedroom, creeps into the bedroom, steals their shotgun, or grabs their shotgun, whatever, you steal it. Cut back again to Mom, who is blowing Weasel, and he's so disgusting. Oh, Jesus Christ. And then right at the moment of climax, she bites his penis off. great. You know, that's whatever.
Apparently to death.
Yeah, she bites his penis off to death. It's quite a bite. I don't really understand. Apparently his heart is located in his penis. So
I mean,
yeah. So he dies and, she spits his dick into the pond and finds her daughter or whatever. It's really stupid. Anyways, his screams wake the others who wake up, pop up out of bed and find Dad pointing a shotgun at him. It all devolves. A shot goes off, but everybody survives. Krug and Dad end up fighting through the house into the living room. And now Mary's corpse is just chilling on the couch. Krug is pretty much trouncing Dad until Junior shows up with the .38. He's got the snub-nosed .38 pointing at Krug, and he's doing the, "I'm gonna shoot you, man! I'm gonna shoot you, man!" Well, Krug is like, "Yeah, why don't you go ahead and shoot me, Junior?" It's just, oh god, it's so fucking, it's just torture. So they have their little Mexican standoff-ish, sort of. Krug convinces him to shoot himself in the head. So he does that and, like, slides down the wall with his eyes crossed or something, going, it's so stupid. Dad has somehow made it down into the basement during all of this and pops out of the basement a la fucking Leatherface with a chainsaw, which he carves through the door, and then, which he could have easily kicked through because it was clearly just balsa wood, But
yeah,
carves through the tissue paper door, comes out, and he backs Krug up, and like Krug steps onto the electro doormat and goes, and then he's fine. And then Sadie shows up, and she's fighting with Mom, and Dad is chainsaw fighting with Krug. Somehow Krug is getting away by throwing furniture or whatever. Sadie somehow manages to blindly run into the swimming pool. Back at the house, just as the police stroll in, pants torn, exhausted, Dad kills Krug with the chainsaw, which we don't see. Back at the pool, as Sadie's trying to get out of the pool, Mom knifes her. She dies. Mom comes back to the house. Her and Dad have a cry hug. The crease comes over and takes the chainsaw, and then they sweep the leg. And wait, I'm sorry. That's wrong movie. takes the chainsaw, and then we get joyous banjo music to close it out, zany comedy style. What the fuck? Yeah. Movie over.
Yeah, no applause.
It was the worst elements of Skinned Alive. What's that one with Susan, what's her name, the kid with his crazy mother, but it's really his aunt.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Incest.
Yeah, that one. It's like a mix of those, and it was a weird mix of several things that we've watched. Not including the Virgin Spring. And somehow worse than all of them. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was 2 years before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it was several years before I Spit on Your Grave. So, I mean, like, this movie was very influential. A lot of really good horror directors, like I said, saw this and were like, oh wow, I could, that inspires me to go make better movies. Because yeah, this very important, like, foundational and utterly shitty movie was actually important to the horror genre.
I guess it was important because it didn't shy away from such extreme subject matter. But the problem, of course, that is so painfully obvious all these decades later, is that it has absolutely nothing to say. I mean,
yeah,
like, it's already kind of accepted in society, regardless of the problems we still continue to have. It's still generally accepted that rape is bad. We don't really need a movie to teach us that, and they certainly didn't need a movie to teach them that in 1972 either, but... Yes, maybe it was the first, particularly in the United States, the first mainstream film to really tackle a subject like that full on. And kudos to Craven for seeing what he saw in The Virgin Spring. But it's just not, it's such a strange transition. I mean, I get it. He's a genre director. He's a niche kind of guy. Like people think he's a visionary in his own way, which I just think is absurd because I just don't see that in his work. I think he's a populist director. He's one of those kind of guys that tries to make movies for the widest possible audience, and he's perfectly willing to sacrifice logic and taste, you know, to try to get a reaction, which this movie ultimately is transgressive only in the sense that it just pushes buttons, you know? So, yes, there's going to be a huge segment of the population that will always be deeply offended by this film, that will see it as a reflection of the downfall of society. You know, this is what's wrong with America, that why we put this filth on screen. And, I mean, they're not wrong.
Yeah.
But it's way... the problem with America runs way deeper than this bucket of shit.
Yeah.
So it's... yeah, this movie, it's... I respect its place in horror, and or at least I can recognize it. I'm aware of it, but I, you know, it's 2024, and I don't give a shit. This movie sucked.
Yeah, it sucks.
I hated it.
I mean, one of the things, the thing that bothered me about it is the... So all of the violence happens off screen because depicting violence on screen is expensive. And you know what's not expensive? Getting women to be naked on screen. So what this movie did was they like put all the violence off screen and put all of the torture nudity on screen. There's a scene that we kind of like skipped over where, not skip over, but we like you just didn't hammer on it, where they forced the two girls to have sex with each other in front of the group. As instead of punching each other, they made them have sex with each other. And that was on screen. That was them getting naked and touching one another on screen very explicitly. And my problem with this movie is the first half of this movie depicts what the criminals are doing as fun. All of the fun music, all of the upbeat elements are focused on them having a good time being the shittiest people. And then once it turns and it becomes the revenge part, then the movie is kind of silent on the topic of fun. And it really fucking bothers me that that's what's going on. It also bothers me because Wes Craven said, I don't know if this is true, like there's evidence for and against it, but Wes Craven said that this was originally going to be a pornographic film, like pornography, and then they like convinced him to make it be a horror movie, and so what he did was made the nudity stay on screen and be the fun part, but also added in a bunch of violence, which was kept off screen and was not the fun part.
That's so strange. And yeah, I wondered if maybe the inclusion of the silly music or the playful music or however you want to say it, it's like, if I'm trying to be purely objective, it's like funny music, like silly, you know, playful. And I wondered if maybe the inclusion of that was to try to lighten the bite or something. But ultimately, it just all plays to serve into what this movie is supposed to be. You know, it's supposed to be about revenge for something terrible that happens to women, but the movie treats women like shit. I mean, women are trash in this film. I mean, just like, oh, we can show them nude. She can literally piss her pants and, you know, she can scream and moan. This guy can literally drool on her fucking face, and that's perfectly okay, but let's not show any violence except for one rubber arm. You know, like,
you're
right about that. That's really, it's offensive. That's offensive.
It's offensive. The fact that the mom fellated the guy up until the moment of his death, that is one of the more offensive parts of this movie. There is no way that that mom was taking her vengeance out that way, you know.
I'll show him by blowing him till he comes in my mouth and then biting his dick off. Like that's a terrible thing to do to her character, and what a humiliating thing for that actress to have to portray on screen. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and all of this in a movie that makes fun of and mocks feminism.
Yeah, this movie is really bad. Like, and that's what I mean by bad. Like, in this case, you know, again, we're talking about this, so we have to kind of try to, like, we're giving our interpretation of it. If I'm sitting here at home alone and I watch this movie and I don't really talk about it with anybody, I maybe tell my wife, oh, that movie sucked. It's not like I'm outraged, you know, I don't go to the, you know, to City Hall and you scream at the top of my lungs or whatever. I just accept that this is a goofy movie. It's a document of the 70s. It's an odd stepping stone for Wes Craven, who was building a career. You know, I understand its place. And then I just kind of move on and just don't think about it anymore because it sucked. But to have to sit down and like actually go over it and discuss the ins and outs of the movie, like, if I'm trying to think about what did I like about it, and there wasn't a whole lot that I liked. I like the setting of the 70s. I liked the nature was pretty.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought it was funny seeing the interior of the house, and because I love seeing that in old 70s shows just to see how people lived back then. But as far as, like, the film itself, I mean, I really did not get much enjoyment out of it at all. I mean, it was, there wasn't a lot of intelligence in it. There were, the humor, I usually can appreciate, you know, that kind of humor if it's done right, but it's, I don't feel like it's done right here. I feel like it's more insulting. It's almost, because it's mocking. It's like, yeah, you know, ha, 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 we're driving across town, killing all the women and putting our penis in their face. Like, it's just like, Jesus, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. 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 And like you said, he's got the lowest common denominator thing. That's just, I think it's just his sense of humor. Like, this movie is he probably went back and watched this movie and, like, laughed at all of his own jokes that he made. He's like, oh man, I was so funny in the 70s. Wow.
Tarantino's so on the money with that too. I mean, it's just like, you know, like, oh, you had a hard time with Reservoir Dogs, like a bunch of criminals being criminals, but you were perfectly okay not only with The Last House on the Left, but making Last House on the Left. That was your idea, yeah. You fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And just in case anybody thought maybe you regretted it, you went ahead and made The Hills Have Eyes Part 1 and 2.
Oh my god.
Like, you didn't get your yayas out in this one. Jesus.
Oh, fuck that. Yeah. Oh, and how about the fact that the guy's name is Krug, and then he went on to, like, have his biggest character be Freddy Krueger?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, can you just not?
Yeah, how can I keep this ball rolling? The whole backstory is supposed to be that Freddy Krueger was a child molester, and that he got burned, but, you know, in revenge. For, you know, again, it's this weird theme that runs through Wes Craven movies. Like, dude, what happened to you when you were a kid? This movie makes me sad. It sucked.
If you had to rate it on a scale of 0 to 5, how much it makes you sad being on the lower end of things compared to how much it makes you happy being on the higher end of things, how many of those would you sad it give you?
I obviously rated it low. I probably rated it higher than I should have, but I just went off of my, you know, my rating system, whatever. I gave it a 1.9, which I still feel was high, considering that I just really didn't enjoy it. I think the highest rating I gave it was whether or not it was a horror film, which it is. It, you know, is it scary? No, but it's whatever. It is a horror film. I rated it relatively high for that, but not, like, it didn't get full marks for anything, not even close. Otherwise, like, lighting, you know, production values, did I enjoy it? The acting, all that stuff was just in the gutter. How about you?
I gave it a 2.2. Yeah. All of those points are, like, there are a few little bits in there for, like, little moments of artistry, but the rest of it is all for, like, being a horror movie and for, like, the obvious influence that it's had. Like, you can see how pivotal of a movie it was for the careers of, like, Quentin Tarantino and Eli Roth. You can even, like, our guy Rob Zombie, like this made me rethink The Devil's Rejects, and you know, it's just it's a foundational film for, you know, what horror became after it. It's just, thank God everyone was like, wow, I could make a better movie than that with some of the ideas I took from there, because this was not it. So
yeah, I mean, it's like he saw The Virgin Spring and loved it, but didn't even have the slightest understanding of what it was supposed to mean, because he stripped all of the meaning and value out of that story and just imported all the uncomfortable elements and makes them 10 times more horrible because they have no value. It's just the centerpiece of this piece of shit. It's like, yeah, you're a dick, Wes.
Yeah. One of the things that I hate about Scream is people talk about how, like, Scream is a celebration of the slasher genre and whatever, but it was fucking Wes Craven. It's not cool to, like, he's celebrating himself. Like, that's right. Just masturbatory. Like, oh yes, I'm celebrating the genre that I helped define.
It's like meta for morons. Like, if you're a complete idiot, the meta quality of Scream is just, like, mind-blowing. Like, oh man, it's a slasher about slashers. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, and no one gives a shit.
Yeah, no, get out of here, Wes. Well, he did, thank God.
Yeah.
So what else have you been up to, John? What better things have you been doing with your time than watching this movie over the last 2 weeks?
Oh man, it's not really horror, but I just finished a series on Paramount called The Woman in the Wall, which is based on the Magdalene Laundries. Is that what they were called in Ireland, where young women were forced to basically wash clothes and live as prisoners in these convent-run nightmare houses? Apparently, they were also working in conjunction with these mother and baby homes, where a lot of these women would give birth, girls or whatever, and they would take the kids away and sell them in an adoption racket. And the ones that they didn't sell would die because they were treated so bad. And apparently just a few years ago, they found 800 of them in a mass grave somewhere on some convent in Ireland or whatever. So anyways, this was a series about, you know, a small town in Ireland and this woman whose daughter was taken away from her in one of these Magdalene laundries. And it's kind of like a murder mystery thing, but it was pretty intense. It was a really good show. So we watched that, just been doing, you know, the usual audio books, trying to think if there was any good ones that, I mean, there was a few good ones. I can never remember what they are. I listened to a book by an author named V. Castro, a woman that, the book is called The Haunting of Alejandra, which is like, it's about a woman who, she's married and has kids, but she's really unhappy, and she's getting haunted by some sort of Mexican folk thing that she thinks is La Llorona. And it she finds out that her family has some sort of generational curse, and it's about her finding her own way in life and her own identity and, you know, getting back to, like, being in control of her own life and all this. It's a pretty cool book. I enjoyed that. And then just some more Alan Moore, like, I didn't learn my lesson from his 61-hour audiobook. Now I'm listening to his short story collection. But I pretty much just jumped right from that to another horror audiobook by an author named Josh Malerman. He wrote Bird Box, that movie Bird Box that had Sandra Bullock. He wrote the book that was based on and of course was involved in the film. But this was a novella that he wrote called The House at the Bottom of a Lake or something like that. This young couple kind of fall in love and they go on a date on a lake and they discover this house that's like buried under the water and weird shit happens. It was pretty good. Whatever. Horror-y stuff things have you been ingesting?
Well, I want to back up to the Magdalene Laundries because if you need a good reason to boycott Hasbro, they're tied into that because they outsourced a lot of their labor to those Magdalene houses. So during that period, a lot of Hasbro's board games and other action figure, like their Hasbro products, the wealth that they've built an empire off of was assembled using not just slave labor, but much, like, closer and whiter and more recent slave labor than you might imagine a major corporation to be built off of. So next time you go to buy a pack of Magic the Gathering cards or a Dungeons and Dragons book or your Spider-Man action figures, what if you just didn't and let that company die? That would be good.
Yeah, apparently a lot of the children that were taken away from their mothers back then were adopted in the United States. So a lot of a lot of children that were adopted in the, particularly in the Northeast, like up around New England and stuff, back in the 70s and 80s and on into the fucking 90s, a lot of those children were stolen from their mothers in Ireland. Yep. As part of this horrible scheme that the, I know it's hard to believe, but that the Catholic Church was running.
Oh, really? I mean,
it's God's house after all.
At least their bodies were safe from sexual harm.
Yeah, the ones that they threw in a fucking water tank or a septic tank or whatever. It's just like, oh my God, what the hell?
Yeah.
But a good show.
A good show, nevertheless. So other than that, the major thing that I watched was a movie that was almost certainly inspired by Last House on the Left. This was actually recommended to me by a listener, a new listener, Alan. He was like, hey, you might like this. It's kind of cool. It's a 1988 German film by, let me find his name real quick, Georges Butgereit. And Necromantic is the film.
Yes.
Yeah. And it kicks so much ass. It is way better than Last House on the Left, even though it has really wretched stuff in it, including an on-screen animal death and dismemberment, which I will say, as far as animal on-screen death and dismemberment goes, was probably the most artistically done. And that movie is... disgusting, revolting, hilarious, reprehensible, and amazing.
Yep, I read that movie many, many years ago because I had read about it in some film magazine that covered, you know, kind of like transgressive film and stuff. And I was like, man, I gotta see this. And then I finally rented it, and it was just like, wow, that movie.
Yeah,
that's a movie. There's a lot to chew there.
There's a great scene where, like, she's left him and she took their sex corpse with her, and he just looks over at the stain on the wall where the corpse had been hanging up and is, like, sad, and I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing!
That movie is something else, and the effects are really good in that movie.
Hell yeah, they were, like, awesome! There's a scene where a guy gets the top half of his head chopped off with a shovel, and there's just, like, a tongue flapping around and blood squirting everywhere. I fucking love that movie!
Yeah, it's pretty funny. That's hilarious. Yeah. I can't believe you watched Necromantic. Wow.
Yeah. And there's a sequel. I haven't watched the sequel yet, though.
I haven't seen the sequel either. I love that this Necromantic 2.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, we have a new listener. Wow, that's... Yeah. That's like, what, three now? So welcome, Alan. Oh my God.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, that's probably enough for one day.
Join us in 2 weeks as we do it all over again.
Oh yeah, 2 weeks from now we're going to be doing Denis Iliadis's, or Iliadi, I don't know how his name is pronounced, Denis I's The Last House on the Left from 2009, which you know is going to be good because it's right around the same time that they remade The Hills Have Eyes, so what could possibly be wrong with what's going to happen 2 weeks from today?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that movie, and we're in for a treat.
What would you say I have, because I haven't seen it, what would you say I have to look forward to as far as, like, compared to this movie we just watched?
Very little humor.
Okay, good.
Scenes of extreme violence and sexual abuse.
Okay.
It's very intense. They go for the realism instead of the zaniness. There's no zaniness at all in this film. It's extremely bleak. Like you know, like in Virgin Spring, you have the little boy, and then there's that character that's kind of simple, like, you know, he's got some sort of cognitive issue. In Last House on the Left, you have Junior, who's kind of I mean, they're all dumb, but I mean, he's dumb, but he's also a junkie. In this movie, you've got this character that's extremely, you know, cognitively, what's the word? Like, he's, you know, he's got serious mental and emotional problems. And it just adds to the, you know, the overall, like, discomfort of things. Because he's like, I don't know. You'll see. It's,
okay.
I'll put it this way. It certainly isn't an important film by any stretch, but it's better
That's
than
good.
It's better than the first Last House on the Left. I'll give it that.
Okay, so I'm imagining rape, murder, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, there. Yeah, kind of. It's. I mean, there seems to be an endless amount of rapey, horrible hillbilly characters that are all filthy and wear like baseball hats with the rim rolled up and greasy wife beaters, and you know, like they pretend to be nice and then they're really, really disgusting and horrible. It's really plays up on that. And the girl that you know, that is the victim of all of this, is she does a great job. I mean, her performance is pretty good. But it's a daunting film. It really is. It's better than I thought it was gonna be. I'll say that. It was one of those things that was like on Tubi and I was like, I'll just try this. I know I'm going to bait myself for it. And I actually watched it. I was like, wow, that was actually not bad. It was very intense and made me very uncomfortable, but it wasn't a bad movie. And nice. Which has always made me think maybe the Craven movie isn't so bad.
It's Well, I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to predict that at least one character in the movie has a soft pack of cigarettes stashed somewhere kind of gross.
Someone's got a chain wallet.
Nice. Well, join us in 2 weeks where we do that, folks. Don't go out there and do bad things. Don't listen to music, and please do not experience a single ounce of joy.
Right. And we're sorry that you have to live.
Ha, 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 ha,